Sex scandals are infrequent but predictable visitors to our nation's capital. At the moment, it's the case of the alleged madam who provided ABC News with a big, fat, little black book of her clients. As Lily Barana put it in a Washington Post editorial yesterday, you just can't top a Washington, D.C. sex scandal for spectator sport. In her op-ed, the one-time stripper and army wife confessed that she's curious about the names of the rich and powerful men who show up in Ms. Julia's phone records. But then, on Friday night, ABC's 2020 reported that they're not rich and powerful enough to bother naming. So what is it about Washington sex scandals that intrigues? Is this story something you've been following? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org, or join the conversation on our blog and find a link to the op-ed, npr.org/blogofthenation. Lily Barana is with us from our bureau in New York. She wrote the memoir Strip City, A Stripper's Farewell Journey Across America, and it's nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
And apparently some of these men told their escorts that they were more important than it turns out that they are. So what's the world coming to you if you can't trust a John?
Well, I think it must be something of a paradox for the clients in question, because on one hand, they have the relief of being not important enough to be named on national television. But on the other hand, they're not important enough to be named on national television. There's the rub.
There's also the shock horror that madam, an alleged madam, is disclosing her client list. As you note in your piece, there's a sort of a mutual assured destruction that usually ensures discretion on both sides of this transaction.
Absolutely. I think it's understood among women who are in this line of work that pimping and pandering is a felony, whereas being a service provider, so to speak, is a misdemeanor. So they're facing some fairly heavy charges in the event that they are caught and prosecuted. And on the side of the customer, certainly they are not looking to have their proclivities advertised. That is part of the deal that's struck. The thing that is fascinating to me is how outraged women in the sex industry community and the general public are that this woman would threaten to name names. I think it's very easy to have that fantasy of being loyal and discreet unto death until you are facing felony charges and potential prison time. I think what we have here is a woman in a sinking rowboat, and she is doing anything she can to bail herself out a cup at a time.
Yeah, she's facing charges herself here in Washington. We should point out she is based in California, in Vallejo, California, and was allegedly running this service. Well, she was running a service. It's what it actually did is in dispute. But she was running the service virtually, phone and computer, from California.
One of the ways that technology makes our life easier. I'm sure there are many wives who are not particularly happy by this new technological wrinkle. However, it is very much the state of affairs, so to speak. If you are not the service provider yourself, basically what you're doing is you're making connections between two people on the buying and selling end of the transaction, if I dare be so calculating in my description.
Okay.
So the woman doesn't need to be there. I think it's probably more typical for a customer to want to see with whom he's engaging, but that's not necessarily the way it's done across the board.
And you raised questions in your article about the media's easy description of this as a high-class escort service. In fact, high-class escort services charge considerably more than the $275 to $300 an hour that these women were charging.
I know as an op-ed person, I'm supposed to be hovering ever so slightly above the news of the day, but I'll disclose and say that I have had friends who are escorts. And in the early 90s in San Francisco, which is not considered as affluent a city as D.C. and its environs, that was the going rate at that time. And this was in the days of grunge. So we're talking 15, 16 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So a super sophisticated working girl would see that as a fairly modest sum. And I think it's safe to say that a truly high class dealing with the absolute top flight executives, politicians, personalities, etc., probably has many, many more systems of security in place in terms of avoiding disclosure. I think that in the likelihood is quite good that there would not be phone records to turn over if somebody really at the very, very top of the game were caught.
Mm-hmm. And so perhaps the relative anonymity of the clientele reflects the sort of middle class prices that are being charged.
Yeah, we're not looking at women who are frisking in Hotel du Cap in the south of France. We are looking at basic in-call, out-call. Of course, it's scandalous because we're talking about a specific act that is considered taboo. But in terms of the economies of scale, no, it's fairly unremarkable.
And we should point out, in her defense, this woman argues that, in fact, what she was providing was a sexual fantasy service. If any sex actually happened, she is shocked that it actually went on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I suppose when you're in trouble and your back's against the wall, you're going to offer any defense that you can to try to deflect the heat. I don't know that anybody in the listening radius believes that she was providing a quote-unquote fantasy that didn't involve actual sexual contact between client and provider. However, can we fault her for trying to offer that as a defense? She has made a fair amount of noise about being also shocked, that none of her clients would come forward to defend the legitimacy of her business. However, that is, it's simply ridiculous. It's not part of the deal that is struck when one comes to an escort service, where whether it is sexual services you're purchasing or simply the pleasure of a woman's company, you do not expect that the pleasure broker is going to be able to call on, I mean, she's not going to be able to call on anybody to stand up for her.
Customer loyalty only goes so far.
Yes, that's a beautiful summary. Couldn't have said it better myself, and apparently I wasn't saying it better myself.
We should point out that the two names have come out, including a fairly important public official who resigned.
Yes, and this fellow, in a previous incarnation, was one of the first aid czars, and part of the policy of any country seeking to get American aid in their AIDS prevention program was to assume an anti-prostitution stance. Now, of course, this hypocrisy is delicious down the road when we're seeing that this fellow, for all intents and purposes, all but admitted by default and resignation that he has procured some services of prostitution himself. So that adds a little bit of a ha-ha factor for the poor boy, but that's the risk you take. Mm-hmm. You know, being a client of an escort service is just as much of a risk-laden endeavor as being an escort itself. So you can't assume that it's not going to have some blowback somewhere down the road.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on this conversation. Again, we're talking with Lily Barana. She's with us from our bureau in New York, author of the memoir Strip City, A Stripper's Farewell Journey Across America, and the author of an op-ed that appeared yesterday in the Washington Post. Giles is on the line. Giles calling us from Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yes, and I wanted to say that one of the reasons these scandals in Washington get so big is that people seem to decide the candidates are gods when they elect, or gods, mm-hmm. when they elect them. And once they get in office, same thing. And, of course, the whole administration helps, or, you know, staff helps this continue, like with Roosevelt not standing up, you know, sitting at a desk.
Right. In your piece, Lily Barana, you talk about the complicity of the press in keeping these scandals relatively quiet until the relatively recent times.
Yes, I do believe that one of the interesting side effects of free love, when sexual information became much more part of the public dialogue in the 1960s, the press took that to heart. And it became much more invested in the personal lives matching the political stance of people who worked in politics and policymakers. So I think that the hagiography of the American politician continues. We do prefer to have this illusion that they are morally spotless, that they are morally consistent at all times. And time again, we see that this simply is not true.
Well, one of the reasons we believe that is because they tell us that.
Yes. And I did have one more thing to say.
Go ahead, Giles.
This gets partisan sometimes, of course. And when Clinton was being just, you know, beaten into the dirt with the Monica Lewinsky thing, I kept saying, the people who live in glass houses should not throw stones.
Mm-hmm.
And look at all the people that were gone from Washington, you know, Gingrich and all the other people, and Clinton was still there. Because they threw stones at the man, and they were just as human as he was.
Well, it's another quote, perhaps going back to Machiavelli, if you're going to strike at the prince, be sure you're going to get him. And he survived, so that may have been the problem. But thanks very much for the call, Giles.
Thank you.
Lily Barana, there is, as you point out in your piece, there's an aspect of, what's the German word, Schadenfreude, taking pleasure in the discomfort of others.
You can't help it. It is my personal weakness. It is my chocolate dip donut of moral, you know, just creepiness on my part. I am as fascinated with this as the next person, simply because when you see somebody who builds their political house on this foundation of moral strength, infallibility, and then you notice that it's, you know, toppled by their own actions, there's something so primally satisfying about that. I'm not a person who reads celebrity tabloids. I don't particularly care in the hijinks of the fancy, beautiful people mm-hmm. who are incredibly rich, and, you know, we see them all the time and therefore become somewhat over-familiar. However, when you see somebody sort of hoisted on their own petard, it's very difficult to look away. So let me not pretend that I am somehow removed from this and just go, puh, puh. I can't possibly imagine why somebody would find this fascinating, because I count me among the people who are got my eyeballs peeled on this one.
And we should point out that only some of the phone records have been gone through, the ones provided to ABC News by this woman. And they cover relatively recent times. Apparently, there are more files going back more years back into the Clinton administration where, well, you never know. You never know. We're talking with Lily Barana, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Ben. Ben with us from Westport, Massachusetts.
Hi, I'm just wondering if in today's day and age, where the administration has at least at times a fairly strong control over what the media reports, if maybe these people are the opposite of what we're being told now. Maybe they are so very important that some heavy thumbs have come down from the White House or the Capitol and have said, you must not report this story. And didn't we see something similar maybe with a 60 Minutes story some time ago? I don't remember exactly what the gist of that was. So I don't really have a question, just that comment.
Well, what do you think, Lily?
I think it's fair to have a healthy cynicism, wondering if we're ever getting the full story on anything. And that's just part of the temper of the times. We do wonder how much control forces in Washington, forces elsewhere, forces in big business have over what gets disclosed and when. I mean, certainly there are some cases that are pushed absolutely to the fore in a way that seems almost astonishing and out of scale, and others that sort of go poof without leaving any kind of wake whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's out of line for somebody to wonder what the real story is and to also be a little bit skeptical about the fact that what they say we're getting is really the whole truth.
Ben, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And it's interesting. You were talking about earlier the you know how times have changed and as sexual information became far more freely discussed. Nevertheless, a politician caught in a sex scandal is just as vulnerable to defeat and disgrace as ever. The case of Mr. Ryan, the politician in Illinois.
Yes, what we're seeing is politicians who have not actually broken any laws but have done things that, in terms of popular opinion, might be considered bad taste, but certainly not illegal. In the case of Jack Ryan, what we have is during the course of his divorce proceedings, the papers became made public record, as they generally are, mm-hmm. and his wife, actress Jeri Ryan, now ex-wife, said that she was pressured by him to go to swing clubs, strip clubs, sex clubs, none of which are illegal. However, possibly not anything that any wife would necessarily want to be subjected to by her husband if that's not something that is sexually interesting to her. And this is not something that is a violation of any law that exists today. However, it did cost him his profile, and he decided to drop out of the Senate race.
Let's see, we get another caller on the line. This is Steve. Steve with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Hi. My name's Steve. I was involved in the sexual underground in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. for about 25 years and been involved in a couple of the scandals there in D.C. tangentially. And I was wondering why the Washington Post and the big media kind of bury a lot of this stuff or, you know, it doesn't come to life. It'll be out in the National Enquirer or the tabloids, but mainstream media still kind of keeps everything underground.
Steve, I would not want to impugn the reputation of another journalistic outlet, but the National Enquirer, its record is not spotless.
But its reporters do a very good job. I was interviewed by the National Enquirer on the Roger Stone affair, he and his wife. The scandal came out about the time when the Clinton scandals did. And they did a very good job of reporting while the Washington Post interviewed me and kind of the story.
All right. Well, do you think, Lily Burana, that the big-time media, and in particular in this town, the big local paper, the Washington Post, tends to bury these stories?
Well, the question that I have for our caller, which is a sincere question, which is what scope of scandal are we talking about? Are we talking about laws being broken or people just doing kinky stuff? Or, I mean, there may also sort of be some parameters set, not so much in terms of do we bury versus not bury, which is speculation on anybody's part, but whether it's newsworthy or not, if it's simply a matter of somebody doing something that's a little far out but isn't necessarily inconsistent with their personal politics or is not illegal, maybe they just feel it's nobody's business.
Hmm. It's also that there are media outlets in a lot of communities across the country that and police departments, for that matter, who publish, list the Johns who've been arrested for soliciting and that sort of thing as a measure of deterrence and public embarrassment. On a national level for 2020, not to say, well, you know, maybe we should name these people if they're not really important public officials.
Well, that's their call. I don't know that that constitutes that may be more of a matter of they just don't feel that it's really enough of a worth the fuss. And I certainly don't work for ABC 2020. I don't know what went behind that decision. However, it would be interesting to find out. I think that it's safe to say that making a phone call to an escort service is not a crime. So just because somebody's number shows up on a phone records doesn't necessarily mean that they had chosen to go forward and hire an escort or hired an escort to do something that's considered illegal. So we always have to bear that in mind moving forward as the scandal progresses, that there is no crime in showing up on a phone list. For all we know, somebody moved to Washington from Vallejo and left behind a pizza parlor that they loved and called Deborah Jean Palfrey with the wrong number trying to get a calzone. So we need to bear in mind that a phone number is not an indictment.
Lily Burana, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lily Burana's memoir is called Strip City, A Stripper's Farewell Journey Across America. She also wrote the novel Try, and we have a link to her op-ed in yesterday's Washington Post. You can go to npr.org/blog of the nation. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.